You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jamie and Jason. This is episode 152, and Jamie and I are going to be talking about anger and how do we deal with the temptation to be angry and to be enraged at things that are happening in life. How do we have self-control? How do we deal with these angry outbursts if they're happening in our life? Or maybe it's not in the form of an outburst. Many people, they express anger more so with kind of a sarcastic, passive-aggressive, that they're still harboring that anger, but they're not blowing up. And then there's people that just internalize anger and they seethe, and then it's like a volcano that mounts and mounts. But we want to talk about this from a biblical lens and speak to the issue because it is extremely practical because when you think about how much in life does not go as we planned, I mean, this is really what triggers anger in our hearts and outwardly in our lives. It is when things do not go as we wanted them to go. This is something that we can all relate to on some level. Now, you can talk to the calmest person out there. Like I could think of, like, my dad is extremely calm, you know, not given to fits of rage, for example. And yet he, like everybody, has to deal with anger. So it's like you can think of the most serene person out there. And this is a subject that matters. So I wanted to introduce it by first saying that anger is something that it's a response. It's a heart response before it is a outward response. And it's triggered by something happening, you know, in a way we didn't want it to happen. And also just speak to this issue of self-control. But before we get too far, Jamie, what are your thoughts when you hear anger, or you have someone talk to you, ask you, how do I deal with my anger? What are the kind of first things that you want to touch on?
Yeah, I think, Jason, one of the things we recognize right off the bat is, like you said, anger in and of itself is inanimate in a sense. We are created in the image of God. We are created with emotion. And one of those emotions is obviously anger. And I think one of the things that we need to have clearly defined in our mind, because I know this is an issue that so often is confused for a lot of people. Anger in and of itself is not sin. Anger in and of itself is not necessarily sin. Oftentimes, there is, let's say, legitimate or righteous reasons that somebody may experience anger. For example, when you've been wronged, when there's injustice, when there's evil, these kind of scenarios play out all the time, and we often feel anger in these kind of circumstances. I think, you know, one very obvious example of that is if you ever pick up the newspaper and read a story about a child that was abused, you feel just this intense anger well up in your soul. And I don't believe that that is sinful in and of itself. Now, if you're like me or most people, the very next actual thought that comes into our head is usually a sinful one. So while we definitely want to make clear that anger in and of itself is not sinful, usually, and I think because we're fallen people, most of the time our anger turns sinful very, very quickly. So there is a possibility of a anger, even born for legitimate reason, but almost always, in fact, probably always, I'm not so sure I'm convinced that we can express anger in the way God does, in a righteous way, right? In a holy way. I think for us, because of our sinfulness, most of the time, even when legitimate in its inception, anger typically ends up not being a positive thing, ends up being a sinful thing. Right? I read that story in the paper and of a child being abused, and the very next thought in my head is, let's go burn the dude's house down, right? Or whatever the circumstance may be. that first initial reaction not necessarily sinful. And I think the same thing is true, you know, in a case where you've been wronged or where there's injustice, you feel that initial reaction of anger, probably not sinful. I think in most cases, that immediate reaction, but then what follows often is. And one of the aspects of anger, like you pointed out, Jason, is that if we do not deal with it, if we do not take it to the Lord, if we do not handle it in a biblically appropriate way, it won't go away. It will seethe, and that seething will then get worse and get worse and deepen into hatred or deepen into, you know, even worse, what the Bible would define as sin, right? Even worse sin, ultimately to the point where prospectively it will destroy us and also potentially destroy somebody else. So it really underscores, Jason, why it's so important that we deal with and have biblical tools to deal with, because anger seems to destroy so much. It's one of those sins. I think there's three or four sins that just have such a devastating impact on not just you, but all the people around you. And anger is definitely one of those.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. And it is important to point out that anger in the righteous sense, obviously God's anger towards sin, his wrath towards unrighteousness, all of that is good and perfect expressions of anger. But I would even add to this that when people get angry at something that is sinful and wrong and offensive to God, they can even use that because we are sinful. We can even take a good reason to be angry and sort of transmogrify that into a justification for why we are angry and have an outburst of anger in a wrong way. And so what I mean by that is it's good to see that anger in itself is not a sin, but it's interesting how when Paul speaks this issue in Ephesians, he says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, as if to say, do not let this take hold of your heart. Do not let this be the controlling factor. And what you'd see in the Bible, and I'd like to look at a couple of good examples where we see anger in a good way and how it's used properly. But I also want to point out that most often anger is presented in the Bible from the human standpoint, humans express anger. It's almost always expressed wrongly. Not always, but almost always. And that's just because of the way we're wired. We when we get angry, we tend to go too far, or we tend to channel it in the wrong way.
I want to correct real quick. My point in pointing that out was not to say, oh yeah, it's okay to be angry. It's for us to recognize the difference, and the reason it matters, I think, is people do often justify by saying, oh, this is righteous, therefore, like you said. But there's also another side of it, which is there's also people that go, oh, anger always is bad. And so they feel shame, they feel guilt, they feel like a terrible believer because they felt what would be legitimate anger for various reasons. And so it's that delineation, kind of like lust or temptation to lust. We wouldn't call that sin, right? But actually lusting would be sin, same sort of thing. So I can be tempted to sin, and that doesn't necessarily mean I have sinned. It's then, okay, now what do I do with it, right? So recognize, like, if you feel anger for a righteous reason, that's okay, but don't give into it to the degree that it becomes sin. That's what I think what I was trying to present there.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that, you know, even when you see examples where in the Bible, and some people rub their eyes and they're like, did I read this right? It says Jesus looked around at the Pharisees and was angry. Like, Jesus got angry? Yes, Jesus did get angry. Absolutely. And he's the sinless and holy one of God. But what you notice is Jesus never, you could never say Jesus lost his temper or Jesus blew a fuse. You can't say that, because that means that is unrestrained, uncontrolled, sinful expression of an anger. And what Jesus always did was express his anger in a holy and righteous way and perfectly. But there is a lot to be gained from looking at the way he showed anger and who he directed it to, primarily, of course, the religious leaders that were misleading the people. Let me look first at a bad example. I think I hate to pick on him, but Moses comes to mind as a guy who he just struggled with anger his whole life. Obviously, there's a lot more to Moses than just his anger, but he's a good example of someone who he saw injustices. He saw things wrong, or saw things that were wrong things happening, and his immediate gut visceral reaction was anger. That anger was not the sin, but how he then responded and how he used that anger and expressed that anger was very often sinful. And the first time we see Moses do this is he ends up killing a guy. And people debated, well, is this murder? Is this self-defense killing? Well, the whole point is he sees an injustice. A Hebrew slave is getting beaten and potentially is at risk of dying. Moses' response is he kills the Egyptian guard. He responds in anger. There's no question he responds in anger. And it's interesting how that event, it shows his desire to be a deliverer. Moses is destined by God to be this great deliverer. But he in a sense, is not doing it according to God's timing and God's way. That's not the way God was going to deliver the Hebrews. He ends up being in the desert for 40 years. Then God brings him back to Egypt. But even later, coming down from the mountain, God has just given Moses the Ten Commandments written with God's own finger on the tablets that God himself prepared. And what do you see? Well, first of all, this is important. Exodus 32 says that God was angry. Okay, so we know that what they're doing is wrong. They are worshiping a golden calf. They are committing idolatry. They're breaking the first and second commandments that are on those tablets he's bringing down the mountain. And God is angry, rightly angry. He's enraged. He's ready to wipe them out. He's ready to start new. And so it's not a bad thing that Moses is angry, but it's, again, how Moses responds in anger. It says he threw the tablets down, and he broke the tablets that were the work of God. It says that as he approached, his anger burned and he threw the tablets out of his hands, breaking them to pieces at the foot of the mountain. Now, some people have said, well, he's symbolizing that the law was broken, so he broke those tablets. What I would say is, I don't think that is what's happening, because later, what happens later is when God rewrites those Ten Commandments, he tells Moses, you're going to be the one that's going to carve out these tablets now. You're going to be the one that's going to present these stones, and I will give you the Ten Commandments again. As if to say, you, Moses, you're the one who broke the tablets that I gave you, those first tablets. And I think that what happened there is Moses, he was rightly angry, but again, his response was sinful. And then this leads up, this kind of culminates with Moses' life, because then Moses, he's leading these grumbling people, and in Moses' defense, these people, they grumbled a lot, right? I mean, they were always fussing about his leadership, about his provision. They were complaining toward him, but it was really directed at God, so he was kind of taking the brunt of a lot of their grumbling. All that to say, they complained about not having water, and God gave Moses specific instructions. He said, speak to the rock. This is towards the end of Moses' life. Speak to the rock. Now, before, Moses had been told to strike the rock. That was early on in their wilderness wanderings. But this was in Numbers chapter 20. Moses was told to speak to the rock. But this is what happens in verse 10. He and Aaron gathered the assembly together in front of the rock. And Moses said to them, listen, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock? Then Moses raised his arm and struck the rock twice with his staff. Water gushed out. And the community and their livestock drank. So again, he was told to speak to the rock. He hits the rock. And you might think, okay, yeah, give the guy a break. He's been having to deal with all these people. This is not a small thing in God's eyes. And this is why I want to kind of bring this forward, is anger is presented as a very serious sin. and when it's expressed wrongly. Anger, sinful anger, is a very serious thing. And the reason we know that is because this is the act. This is what God calls attention to later. This is the reason that Moses does not get to enter the promised land. He can look at it from afar atop the mountain, but he doesn't get to go into the promised land because of his sinful expression of anger, because he lost his temper. And so Moses is just an example. He's, you know, we can all relate to Moses. It's not to pick on him and say this is a terrible guy and everything he did was wrong. It's just to say that this is something he clearly struggled with, and maybe you can relate. But this is how God views anger. We know that he has a right way for us to express it, and there's Jesus models that. But what Moses expressed on these occasions was a sinful form of anger.
Yeah, it's true, Jason. And I think the Bible gives us tons of examples of that, right? Where the anger of man, and part of it, I think, too, when you think about it, you know, Jason, anger is one of those things where I can go from being in a good, healthy attitude, good, healthy place, to being enraged in a matter of, you know, seconds or minutes over something, right? You see this in when you're driving a car and somebody does something stupid around you. You go from, you know, sometimes you're singing along to the radio and whatever, then you're yelling at the driver in the other car and you're like, whoa, like that was so fast. And you see that played out in scripture as well, examples like Moses and many others. I mean, one of the ones that sticks out in my mind is the story of David when he's being chased by King Saul and he's, you know, hiding out in the wilderness in 1 Samuel chapter 24. He has this opportunity to kill the king, right? The one who's making his life miserable. And he chooses not to take it, right? He says, I will not lay my hand on the Lord's anointed. And you're like, oh, that's so good. You know, he responded with such great character before the Lord in that moment. That's awesome. And then chapter 26, same thing. He has another opportunity to kill the king. He's actually, in this case, the Lord has put the king and his soldiers to sleep in such a way that David's able to actually crawl into the camp, go all the way up to the king, and his guys are like, hey, you know, spear him, get done with it. And he says, again, you know, he deals with it in a God glorifying way. No, I'm not going to touch the Lord's anointed. But in between those two chapters is this random weird little story in chapter 25 where this guy, he's very much a side character, right, in the narrative of 1 Samuel. It's not a part of the story really at all. And David reaches out to this guy at one point and he says, hey, you know, my men have been taking care of your livestock. Can you send us some bread? Basically, we scratch your back. Hey, help us out a little bit. And this guy responds back like, who the heck are you? I didn't ask for your help. Not sending you any bread. And David's response is, he tells his men to go strap on their swords. He's like, we're going to go kill them all, right? And you're like, whoa, that was such an impulsive, like, this guy ticked me off. And the result would have been, if not for this guy's wife intervening and really basically pleading with David not to sin, right? Not to do evil in the sight of the Lord. David would have ended up sinning in a gruesome way by just going and murdering a bunch of people. And this is the David who's the guy after the Lord's own heart, right? This is the David who literally longs to be in the presence of the Lord. You know, when he's writing Psalm 27, right? The only thing he wants from the Lord is to be in his presence. Like, this is a really godly man. Yeah, he clearly has issues. We all know that. But it is such a good example of how destructive anger can be, where you literally, like, would David have made a decision like that apart from that spontaneous moment of anger to just go murder people? No, that's not part of his character, right? Well, I guess it is to some degree because it was there, but you see what I'm saying. Like, that's not a typical kind of behavior that you would make in a normal, rational way. And so you see all these warnings in Scripture, and you're like, I mean, the Bible warns us a lot, right? Ephesians 4, you already pointed out. Think of James 1, you know, same things. My dear brothers and sisters, take note. Everyone should be slow to listen, slow to speak, and slow to be angry, for human anger does not produce the righteousness of God. Or even think Proverbs 29:11, right? Fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm. And these are not alone. You know, the Bible has so many verses about this, because it is a sin that causes us to make terrible, horrible choices that we wouldn't, you know, maybe in a normal context. And so there is a degree to which we look at anger and we should go, we should take this very, very seriously, right? We should really work this out in us to be like, wow, I'm recognizing this anger in me, and I need to see it as a huge red flag that I got to do something. Otherwise, I'm probably going to end up in sin, probably going to end up hurting other people.
Yeah, I love the example you brought up, because there's an example where David, he was no longer acting in righteous anger, right? Because now it's like his pride was being attacked. And this guy, Nabal, who was kind of just a fool, because that's what his name means. But he was foolishly responding to the soon-to-be king. And so you could say, well, this guy deserves to be wiped out. And David would have maybe a point there. But the fact that Abigail comes along and has like this, let's be reasonable. Let's just try to have this reasonable calmness to us. You know, that's, and honestly, this is probably where women can often help men, and it could be vice versa. But I think it's one of those things we see here, is the woman is able to calm down the man's rage at another man. And that's significant. That's, I think, recognizing I am angry is a very important first step, because, I mean, just think about all the, as you're talking about, the destruction and mayhem that is caused by anger. So many relationships. I mean, I know folks where they were long-term friends, and it basically one explosion of anger has seemingly ruptured that relationship, and it, you know, who knows how they'll be able to reconcile, because it's so devastating how that response has affected them. And that's just the nature of anger. It just kind of is a wrecking ball, in that if you don't, you know, if you have a home that needs to be destroyed, then a wrecking ball is a good thing, or a building that needs to be taken down. But when it's out of control, that wrecking ball is devastating, and it can harm people, harm relationships. You say things that you just wish you could take back. And it's something that the Holy Spirit is given to Christians for this very reason. That's why self-control is listed there. Peace also, and patience. But I think self-control, because so often we would want to go with our gut reaction in anger. And I think stopping and considering, recognizing, I am angry right now. Now, how am I going to respond with this anger? And even if David, say, for example, in that example you gave, if David had kind of consulted with himself and said, I'm angry right now, what am I going to do with that anger? How is my anger going to bring glory to God? How is it going to be about his honor and glory, not about my honor and glory? And we see this example. This is an example I love of a good expression of anger. Nehemiah. Nehemiah is just a great guy. I love the whole story of Nehemiah. He's just a man who was used by God in a significant way. But he's come back, and he's helping to rebuild the wall. And even among the Jews who have gone back with Nehemiah, there's an injustice. People are taking advantage of one another. And some people are saying, even our sons and daughters are being enslaved. Our daughters are enslaved by our fellow Jews because we owe them money, and they're mistreating us. They're not giving us our vineyards back. And so Nehemiah sees this injustice happening. The poor basically are being taken advantage of. And this is what we read. It says, in first-person perspective, Nehemiah 5, verse 6, when I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry. And then it says, I pondered them in my mind and then accused the nobles and officials. I told them, you are charging your own people interest. So I called together a large meeting to deal with them. And it goes on to say how he dealt with the issue. He confronted them on the injustice. But what I love about this is that it says that he recognized he was angry. He heard what the cause of injustice was, and then he pondered them in his mind. You know, you get this sense like Nehemiah was mulling over this. He's praying, he's thinking through, he's meditating. God, how do I respond in the right way here? And we know it's the right way because he then goes directly to the nobles officials. You know, he doesn't take up a sword and say, all right, let's get these bad guys. He doesn't do that. And he doesn't, you know, he goes to them with an actual charge and accusation. He doesn't say, you know, he doesn't go there to just insult them or to berate them. But he's successful. He's successful in what he does because he brings forward these issues. And it says at the end, the people that he accused, they kept quiet because they could find nothing to say. And see, if you can respond, you can channel that anger like Nehemiah did and think through, okay, what is going on here? How do I need to respond? Because this has made me angry. I need to deal with this in an appropriate way. And are you going to be able to respond in such a way that you're not putting yourself in the wrong? See, these people had nothing to say to Nehemiah because they recognized the dude's right. He's got us nailed. He's got us pegged. He's saying everything true. He hasn't overstepped what is true. And so they couldn't do anything but comply with what Nehemiah was saying. And I think that's such a powerful lesson for us because so often, again, you have right reasons to be angry. And yet when you're responding in an overreaction or in an explosion, that right reason for being angry is then distorted into this bad response, this sinful response. And you're not even accomplishing what you're hoping to accomplish. You're not righting the wrong that you're wanting to take care of. And yet when you respond with a calm and reasonable attitude and you take it to the Lord, first and foremost, let God know that you are angry, not with him, but just with the situation. I think that's such an important application from that Nehemiah passage.
Yeah, I think too, another one that goes along with that, Jason, is when we think about disproportionate response, basically this little thing happened and I'm enraged about it. Maybe the problem wasn't actually that thing. Maybe that's just, here's a target I can hit. I'm already upset about something. And I think some of that we have to recognize in ourselves as well. Be like, okay, wait a minute. I'm very upset. I'm very angry about this. And as I ponder what's actually happening, I'm going, wait a minute. My anger does not match the actual what's gone down, you know, the actual what's happened in this particular situation. And so recognizing, okay, wait a minute, what is it that's driving this? Like, what is actually in me or in my character or going on in my life that I need to deal with, that I need to address, right? Because we see this a lot of times where somebody will respond, you know, very angry and you go, but they're responding to this thing that was really not that big of a deal. So what's actually happening here? You know, what's actually going on? Odds are good that you'll find in your own life, in your own heart, maybe in your own walk with the Lord, there's an area there that's causing, you know, this anger that actually has to be addressed. So I think sometimes, you know, we so often slap a Band-Aid on what, you know, anger is. A lot of times it's the symptom of the problem, right? The problem is the heart, but what's causing that? And sometimes before the Lord, you know, I have to honestly say, Lord, I don't know why I'm upset right now. I don't really know why. I know this thing happened, but even in my own head, I'm recognizing my response doesn't match the actual what went down, right? This was a minor thing, and yet I'm very upset about it. Lord, reveal to me what is going on in my heart or what is going on, you know, in my soul, my emotions, my spirit. What's going on causing this, right? And recognizing that. And I think, you know, if you go back to that example of David, I'll bet you there's more connection between those two chapters before and after to why David responds the way he responds, right? He's actually angry about something else. It's really not about bread. It's really not about a minor offense, because that's what it is, right? It's a minor offense. And yet he responds with, you know, he responds to a $5 crime with a $50 response, in a sense. And odds are good there's more going on in his heart that has more to do with, you know, some these other bigger things that are going on in his life at the time. And so I think we got to recognize that as well, that a lot of times our anger is just the symptom of something else, right? Of whatever is actually going on in us. Or, you know, maybe it's just like straight up, I'm angry with this person and I've never dealt with it. And so they do some minor thing, and then now I'm responding in a massive way. And it's really not about that. It's about, you know, maybe I've been festering this anger over some little thing that was months ago, or maybe even years ago, right? And so recognizing that, going, okay, Lord, I need to root this out of my heart, right? This is bitterness, and I need to deal with it. I need to be able to love my brother or sister in a God-glorifying way. I need to not forfeit my witness, right? As Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 6, by responding, you know, in this anger and being destructive. And even sometimes I think that comes down simply to we have to pray for the good of the person we're angry with. That's, you know, advice I've gotten before in my life, and it's been very helpful. Because here's the thing, you can't pray for the Lord to bless somebody and be angry with them at the same time. Like, one of them has to give. And so as I seek the Lord, you know, maybe it starts out with just a prayer of, Lord, I'm angry with this person, or I'm angry about the situation. Lord, change my heart here, right? Lord, give me a desire to desire their good, right? Give me a desire to pray for their blessing. Give me a desire to, and then eventually you end up actually fully praying and meaning it, praying for their good, you know, praying for their blessing, praying for the Lord to grow them and draw them to himself. And in the end, what you find is after a while, now that anger is gone. And I'm actually now just praying for their good.
Yeah. So maybe to kind of sum up what we've been covering here, I think taking stock of your own heart is kind of a big aspect of what we've been addressing here with anger. First of all, when you feel angry, it's so important to acknowledge it, to confess it. You know, it's so easy for us to say, oh, I guess I just lost my cool, or yeah, I gave that guy a piece of my mind, right? Or even we will say things like, someone made me angry, right? It's just comes off of our tongue so easily. Oh, that person made me angry. Well, actually, that person did something and you did get angry, but they themselves aren't the ones that made you angry. So I think owning it, first of all, is I feel angry. You know, that's what Nehemiah did. I was very angry when I heard this. I feel anger. And then taking time, and obviously this is going to look different in different contexts, but in whatever way you can, to take stock of why you're feeling angry, to put on the brakes, and instead of reacting with that knee-jerk reaction, which is so easy to do with anger, put on the brakes and say, why am I angry really? What can I do that's a godly response to this wrong situation? Because, you know, we're not going to say these aren't good reasons to be upset. Most often they probably are. But take stock of what's a godly response to that wrong action either done to you or to someone else. And thirdly, just seek the Lord in all of it and ask for his guidance. And that's part of taking stock of your own heart, is you got to be bringing what's on your mind to the Lord. You know, that's the prayer. Search me, O God, and search out my heart. That's the prayer that those who struggle with anger need to be praying regularly, as we all do. Search me, O God, and know my anxious thoughts, all of these things that bother me, that make me angry, and help me to give them to you. That's what we most need.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.